are listening to CFRC Radio from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
Happy New Year and welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's truly an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. So today we're going to start with a more instrumental and melodic vibe, and I have two instrumental tracks for you, which are of Bollywood songs, and then we'll move on to our weekly short story, and we'll end off with some upbeat Punjabi music. How does that sound? All right, so let's get into the wonderful instrumental music of Indian classical.
Thank you.
Hi guys, hope you like that. And for today's short story, well, it's called the betuk after the playlist. So betuk is typically means just sitting down with people to discuss, or just like, you know, like family dinners, I guess. So this title is called the betuk after the playlist. Let's begin. On Friday nights in Vancouver, the rain didn't fall like monsoon. It came quiet, sheets, steady as a Thonborough drone. There, always, like the city's way of keeping time. Arjun used to think Indian classical music needed a certain kind of room. You know, warm lights, carpeted floors, people who knew when to cough and when not to. Back home, a betuk felt like an agreement. We will sit, we will listen, we will let the music take its time. In Canada, time felt rented. Everything had a start time, an end time, and a link to RSVP. Still, Arjun kept saying yes to gigs because saying no felt like letting the thread snap. That week, a local art space messaged him. Can you do something classical but accessible? We're doing a South Asian sounds night. You're on after a Punjabi DJ set. After a DJ set. Arjun stared at the lineup poster. Neon letters, a tabla icon used like a decoration, his name wedged between Bali throwbacks and bass bhangra, as if rag was just another flavor on a menu. He almost declined the gig. Instead, he replied, sure. Then he opened his harmonium and felt his hands hesitate. What did it mean to sing rag after a playlist? He practiced anyway. Slow, stubborn practice, like sweeping a floor no one else had noticed was dirty. He worked on Bageshwari, a night rag that could hold softness without collapsing into sweetness. He rehearsed the bandish until, a bandish meaning a song, until it sat in his throat like something true. But every time he sang, he imagined the room. People checking phones, laughing between phrases, expecting the next beat to arrive the way it always did, on command. And he feared the worst thing. Not that they wouldn't understand, that they wouldn't even stay long enough to try to understand. The night of the event, he arrived early with his harmonium wrapped in a padded case. The venue was half cafe, half gallery. White walls, local paintings, a barista steaming milk like it was percussion. Someone was tapping cables to the floor. The DJ was doing a sound check. The bass made the windows vibrate. Arjun found a chair in the corner and watched. People came in wearing raincoats and glitter. They ordered drinks and posed under the poster. A group of students argued about which Punjabi artist was most Canada-coded. Someone else asked the bartender if the chai was authentic. See, Arjun, he didn't mind. He learned not to mind. But all the nostalgia, the pride, the reinvention, misunderstanding, joy, everyone carried their own version of home, and most of them were tired. When the DJ began, the room filled fast. The crowd moved easily like they've been waiting all week for the permission to become loud. Arjun stood near the back, harmonium at his feet, and tried not to take it personally when nobody looked at him. Then the organizer of the event came up, breathless. Okay, you're on in 5. Just keep it short, you know, like 20 minutes. People might leave if it's too long. Arjun wanted to laugh, and honestly, I do not blame him. 20 minutes was barely an introduction in a rag. 20 minutes was a warm-up, a clearing of a throat, a handshake. But he nodded anyway. 20, he said, like it didn't sting. When the DJ set ended, applause cracked through the room. The lights shifted. People stayed standing, still buzzing, still moving. Someone shouted for one more track. Someone else yelled, play AP. AP meaning AP Dylan, another famous Canadian artist. The organizer took the mic. Okay. Now we're just switching it up. We've got Arjun bringing us something classical, so give it up. A few polite claps, a few confused looks. The room's energy didn't drop so much as tilt, uncertain. Arjun walked to the front carrying his harmonium like it was both an instrument and an argument. He He sat down on a small rug someone else had placed for him, as if it would magically create the right atmosphere. He took a breath, and instead of starting with the Bageshri ride that he had planned earlier, he did something that he hadn't planned. He spoke. "Hi," he said into the mic, voice steady. "I know you were just dancing. I'm not here to stop that. I just want to show you a different kind of rhythm." Someone near the front laughed, kindly, not cruelly. Arjun continued, "In Indian classical music, we don't jump straight into the hook. We build the space first. If you can give me just 2 minutes of your attention, I'll do the rest." 2 minutes felt like a reasonable request, modern, negotiated, and the room didn't go silent, it just softened. People turned, a few sat on the floor out of curiosity. Someone leaned on a wall, arms crossed, like they were daring him to be interesting. And so Arjun began with a single note, soft, unhurried, then another. He let the sound bloom the way rain spreads on pavement, quietly claiming more area than you expect. The harmonium's drone steadied the room. He shaped the alap slowly, not because he was trying to be traditional, but because he was trying to be honest. He did not chase the crowd. He did not perform accessibility. He offered them the doorway and waited to see who stepped through. And something strange happened. Oh my gosh. A girl near the front stopped scrolling on TikTok. A guy who had been filming lowered his phone. A couple who looked ready to leave paused mid-step, as if the air had changed and they wanted to understand why. Arjun moved into the Bageshri rug that he had planned for, like it was a memory returning to him. Gentle, intimate, the kind of rug that doesn't demand attention, but it actually earns it. He added the song quietly, letting the words sit in the melody like small lamps. The room sound changed. People breathing, their breathing became audible. Even the barista slowed down, milk steaming in a softer hiss. Then halfway through, Arjun heard it. A beat. Not from the DJ booth, but from the crowd. Someone unconsciously started tapping a foot to the theka he was implying. Another person joined with a small nod, the kind you do when your body recognizes a pattern before your mind names it. Arjun felt the warmth spreading through his chest, not triumph, not relief, something closer to connection. So he did the second unplanned thing. He invited the room in. He shifted into a faster phrase, still the same song, but with enough pulse that the audience could feel where the rhythm lived. He repeated a line, then varied it, then returned, like teaching someone a language through kindness. A small cheer rose when they recognized the repetition, like they'd solved a puzzle. Arjun smiled into the mic without stopping the music, and the smile changed the room. It made people less afraid of getting it wrong. By the time he reached the ending, the gallery cafe art space had become something else, a baithak that hadn't existed 10 minutes ago. He ended on a final note and let it fade. The silence afterward was heavier than applause. It was the kind of silence that means people are still inside the song. And then the clapping came, louder than polite, not just appreciation but surprise, like they hadn't expected to feel anything and were a little offended that they did. After the set he packed up, a teenager approached him. Hoodie, wet hair, a phone in hand. He said, "I didn't know classical music could hit like that." Half embarrassedly, he said. Arjun laughed softly. "It hits different." The teen nodded. "I only know like little clips online, but this felt," he searched for the right word, "like it was alive." "It is," Arjun said. "It's not just built for skipping." The teen hesitated and asked, "Is there a playlist for this?" Arjun looked at him. Like, really, really looked and saw not disrespect but desire. So he said, "Yeah, I'll make you one, but promise me something. Don't listen while doing something else. Give it 10 minutes sometimes. No doom scrolling on TikTok. Just let it happen." So outside, the Vancouver rain kept falling, steady and patient. Arjun walked to the SkyTrain with his harmonium case bumping lightly against his leg, feeling oddly lighter. He thought about how the classical scene here was just growing, not in marble halls, not in perfectly quiet rooms, but in borrowed spaces between genres, in pop-ups, in cafes, in communities that were learning, imperfectly, but learning how to listen again. Maybe a better didn't need the old rules to exist. Maybe it just needed one person willing to start slow, and a room willing to stay for 2 minutes longer than it planned. All right, let's go back to our Punjabi music. So I want to introduce you, now that we're switching gears from strings and sitars, to something a little more contemporary. And so this next artist has taken Punjabi music global, blending smooth R&B and hip-hop with that same depth of feeling. So here is Excuses by AP Dhillon and Gurinder Gill, and we'll keep the vibe going with a few more of his tracks after this. Enjoy.
ਟੁੱਟੇ ਦਿਲ ਨੂੰ ਸਾਂਭੀ ਫਿਰਦੇ ਕੀ ਫਾਇਦਾ ਮੁਟਿਆਰੇ ਨੀ 12 ਸਾਲ ਮੱਝੀਆਂ ਚਰਾਈਆਂ ਛੱਡੇ ਤਖਤ ਹਜ਼ਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਹਰ ਸਾਹ ਨਾਲ ਯਾਦ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਕਰਦੇ ਰਹੇ ਕੋਈ ਸਾਡੇ ਵਾਂਗ ਕਰੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀ ਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਮੇਰੇ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀ ਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀ ਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਕਹਿੰਦੀ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਸੀ ਚੰਨ ਤੱਕ ਰਾਹ ਬਣਾ ਦੇ ਤਾਰੇ ਨੇ ਪਸੰਦ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਹੇਠਾਂ ਸਹਾਰੇ ਲਾ ਦੇ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਤਾਰਿਆਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਜਦੋਂ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਵੇਖੇਗੀ ਮੇਰੀ ਯਾਦ ਜਦੋਂ ਆਊਗੀ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਰਾਸ ਨਾ ਆਇਆ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਨੀ ਜੋ ਦਿਲ ਦਾ ਮਹਿਲ ਬਣਾਇਆ ਸੀ ਤੋੜ ਕੇ ਮੋਤੀ ਫੁੱਲਾਂ ਦੇ ਉਸ ਮਹਿਲ ਚ ਬੂਟਾ ਲਾਇਆ ਸੀ ਨੀ ਜਿਵੇਂ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਛੱਡ ਗਈਆਂ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਅਲੜੇ ਜਦੋਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਛੱਡੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਉਹ ਜਿਵੇਂ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਛੱਡ ਗਈਆਂ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਅਲੜੇ ਜਦੋਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਛੱਡੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀ ਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀ ਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਇਸ਼ਕੇ ਦੇ ਰਾਹਾਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਰੁੜ ਕੇ ਰਹਿ ਗਏ ਹਾਂ ਲੋਕਾਂ ਦਿੱਤੇ ਤਾਨੇ ਮੇਣੇ ਹੱਸ ਕੇ ਸਹਿ ਗਏ ਹਾਂ ਇਸ਼ਕੇ ਦੇ ਰਾਹਾਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਰੁੜ ਕੇ ਰਹਿ ਗਏ ਹਾਂ ਲੋਕਾਂ ਦਿੱਤੇ ਤਾਨੇ ਮੇਣੇ ਹੱਸ ਕੇ ਸਹਿ ਗਏ ਹਾਂ ਸਾਡੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਨੂੰ ਤੂੰ ਪੈਰਾਂ ਥੱਲੇ ਰੋੜਦੀ ਰਹੀ ਜਜ਼ਬਾਤ ਜਦੋਂ ਰੁੜੇ ਉਦੋਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਲਾਰੇ ਨੀ ਤੂੰ ਲਾਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਏ ਦਿਲ ਤੇਰਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਟੁੱਟੂਗਾ ਤਾਂ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗੂਗਾ
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with, the same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
Hey, listeners. Well, this marks our end of the journey for this week. I apologize. I lost track of time and could not play any other Gurinder Gill and AP Dhillon songs. But do not worry. We will be back same time next week, next Friday at 3 p.m. on Melodies of Myth. And we will pick up where we left off. So till then, have a wonderful week. And we will see you very, very soon.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Please welcome to the stage, Don Lemon.
The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath in the lungs of democracy. I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Same-gender couples get property rights in the Philippines, UK trans people can use toilets anywhere except work, and trumped-up charges plague gay journalist Don Lemon. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Cohabitating same-gender couples in the Philippines can now be recognized as joint owners of property that they acquired during their relationship. The February 5th ruling by the Supreme Court has seemingly moved the Southeast Asian Islands nation one step closer to marriage equality. Two women had purchased a house and lot together during their relationship. The property in the Manila suburb Quezon City was only registered under one partner's name. When they split up, the unregistered partner wanted to partition the property or sell it. She produced a document signed by her ex confirming that she had paid about half of the purchase price for the property and its renovation costs. The registered partner first agreed, then rejected the document and broke the deal. So the unregistered partner filed a complaint. The Philippines Family Code defines civil marriage as a special contract of permanent union between a man and a woman. Because they're denied civil marriage in the predominantly Roman Catholic country, the court concluded that property questions involving same-gender couples are governed by Article 148 of the Code, which covers unmarried cohabitation. That provision makes the properties acquired by both of the parties through their actual joint contribution of money, property, or industry owned by them in common in portion to their respective contributions. The Supreme Court reversed lower courts that had rejected the unregistered partner's claim. It found that the signed acknowledgement was sufficient proof of her actual contributions to the property under Article 148, and that she is therefore entitled to demand its partition. The High Court issued a press release soon after the ruling was announced, calling on the government to address same-sex couples' rights, as courts alone cannot resolve all related policy concerns.
Trans people in the United Kingdom can use bathrooms and changing rooms that match their gender identity, except in the workplace. That's the result of a February 13th Supreme Court ruling that grows out of last year's somewhat convoluted decision that trans women are not legally women under the Equality Act, but are nevertheless protected from discrimination. Now, the Trans Solidarity Alliance says the situation for trans people, employers, and service providers is completely incoherent. In this week's ruling, the justices decided that employers must provide separate bathrooms based on the worker's gender assigned at birth. That specifically denies trans employees access to bathrooms that match their gender identity. However, trans customers of the same establishments may be allowed to use gender-appropriate bathrooms. One justice told The Independent that service providers ranging from restaurants and bars to hospitals and government facilities should be guided by common sense and benevolence that is not blinkered by unyielding ideologies. The justices added in their ruling that employers are allowed to provide gender-neutral bathrooms for use by all staff, including trans employees. Without such accommodations, the organization Trans Solidarity points out that trans workers would not be able to do their jobs. They underscore the perplexity, saying, "What bathroom a trans person can use in a pub may now depend on whether they are there as an employee or for a drink."
Public school officials in the UK are being directed to notify parents if their child's behavior suggests that they are questioning their gender identity. Legally binding guidance issued on February 12th by the Department of Education also instructs school staff to discourage students from socially transitioning and to exercise extreme caution using a trans student's chosen name or pronouns. Under the guidance, trans students must not be allowed to use campus bathrooms or changing rooms that match their gender identity. This is about pragmatic support for teachers, reassurance for parents, and above all, the safety and well-being of children and young people, according to Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson. The guidance stands firmly on last year's much-criticized CAS review. That's a study that condemns the availability of puberty blockers and hormone therapies for trans young people. It led the government to ban their use in most cases. Cal Horton believes that the new guidance will do more harm than good for trans young people. Horton is a research fellow at the Oxford Brookes Business School, specializing in trans issues. Their analysis echoes that of several other critics. In Horton's words, "Trans children need to be supported and respected in order to be safe at school, in order to access their right to education, in order to enjoy their childhood. Instead, we are seeing a complete ban on access to appropriate toilets, PE, accommodation on school trips, a complete erosion of their rights." Horton concludes, "It will lead to children avoiding the bathroom, avoiding exercise, missing out on school trips, dropping out of school, and losing any hope of education, equality, friendship, or happiness."
It's the third strike for New Hampshire's trans student bathroom ban. Republican Governor Kelly Ayotte has for the second time vetoed a bill to require trans students to use sex-segregated school bathrooms and changing facilities that match their gender assigned at birth. Republican Governor Chris Sununu vetoed a similar bill the year before. In her 2025 veto message, Ayotte complained that the measure was overly broad and impractical to enforce, potentially creating an exclusionary environment for some of our citizens. The Republican-controlled legislature failed to secure a two-thirds majority vote needed to override Ayotte's veto last December. Observers believe an override will fail again. Amy Terevecchia of the statewide LGBTQ group 603 Equality applauded Governor Ayotte's veto, proclaiming, "Bathroom bans simply have no place in New Hampshire. In Taravetria's words, in a time of unrelenting legislative attacks and misinformation campaigns around transgender people and their rights, transgender and gender non-conforming people deserve safe access to public spaces as they go about living, working, and contributing to our communities.
Finally, embattled U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's fiery five-hour joust with minority Democrats culminated in an explosive confrontation with Vermont's lesbian Congressmember Becca Ballant. The February 11th hearing before the House Judiciary Committee focused on the Justice Department's failure to release all of the files related to the late convicted child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Both congressional chambers overwhelmingly approved opening the files, and the law was signed by Bondi's boss, President Donald Trump. Bondi reprised her belligerent performance before a Senate committee late last year, evading relevant questions while rifling through a binder of misleading information to use against Democratic committee members. Near the end of the hearing, Bondi attempted to deflect Ballant's examination by referring to a 2024 House resolution condemning the phrase, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Ballant joined more than 40 other Democrats voting against it, and called the measure yet another way to sow division and demonize Palestinians, according to the Jewish News Syndicate. When Ballant asked if the Justice Department had seriously investigated powerful officials whose names appear in the Epstein files, Bondi's evasion enraged Ballant.
I want the record to reflect that, you know, with this anti-Semitic culture right now, she voted against a resolution condemning.
Oh,
is Jewish. I just want to be clear.
Oh, do you want to go there, Attorney General? Do you want to go there? Are you serious? Talking about anti-Semitism to a woman who lost her grandfather in the Holocaust?
Really?
As some of her Democratic committee colleagues came to her defense, Ballant stormed out of the chamber. She returned to sit with the Epstein survivors. Bondi just snickered.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in airs around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
This week, we honor the February birthday of Anais Nin.
As June walked towards me from the darkness of the garden into the light of the door, I saw for the first time the most beautiful woman on earth. A startlingly white face, burning dark eyes, a face so alive, I felt, it would consume itself before my eyes.
Anais Nin is considered an important figure in LGBTQ plus and feminist history, not necessarily because she identified strongly as a lesbian, but because she was a pioneer in advocating for sexual freedom, bisexuality, and women's sexual agency without shame.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 1982, Wisconsin becomes the first state in the nation to make it unlawful for private businesses to discriminate based on sexual orientation in employment and housing. And in 2017, Moonlight becomes the first LGBT film to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online
at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The U.S. Constitution's First Amendment free press rights clashed with its First Amendment freedom of religion when a gay African-American journalist was arrested. But was U.S. President Donald Trump's personal antipathy towards Don Lemon the real reason behind the charges? Federal judges have rejected the case concerning the former CNN host's coverage of a January 18th protest that breached a Minneapolis church whose pastor doubles as an immigration enforcement agent. Failing that, Attorney General Pam Bondi tweeted that she herself had directed the arrest. Lemon was in a Beverly Hills hotel on his way to cover the Grammy Awards when he was detained on January 29th by more than two dozen Homeland Security and FBI agents. He made a surprise appearance at the Human Rights Campaign's New York Gala on February 7th.
Hi, everyone. How are you? How was your week? let me tell you. All of those jailhouse scenes you see in certain movies, no, not that cute. Thank you guys for everything. Thank you for your support. Good evening. Good evening, family. How are you? Can I have a few minutes of your time? Because this is the only thing, I did Jimmy Kimmel and I'm doing this. Because this is really important. Because the freedom to live in America and be who you want, love who you want, it's a human right, right? The freedom of the press in this country is a human right. So for me, tonight feels less like a gala that you guys are here, and it feels more like a gathering, just sort of hanging out, a gathering of people who still believe that truth matters, right? Dignity is not optional. Freedom is not guaranteed. We've seen that in this time. This past week reminded me of something that I thought that I understood. The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath in the lungs of democracy. It is the bedrock of our democracy. And when that breath is threatened, all of us can feel it before you can even explain it. Do you know that saying, I can't breathe? Our society cannot breathe without the freedom of the press, the freedom of speech. So last week, I felt it. I felt the smothering, the suffocation. I saw how quickly that a voice can be targeted, how easily truth can be distorted. Don't pay attention to the noise, people. Do not. I saw how fast a story can be turned into a warning. But I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of that witness. To tell, you can applaud if you want. It is to tell. I feel so comfortable here, I could just, you know, hang out. It's to tell the truth as clearly as I can. With clarity comes consequences. You guys know that, right? You saw what happened to me. There is a passage in the scripture that says, the truth shall set you free, or depending on which church or which Bible or which rendition of the Bible, King James or whatever, it'll say the truth shall make you free. But it doesn't say that the truth will make you safe. It does not say that it will make the powerful comfortable. That's not part of the promise. It does not say that it's going to spare you from the cost of seeing too clearly. And I think most times as members of the LGBTQ plus community, we see things a lot clearer than most people. And right now, that cost of the truth is rising, like the price of eggs and everything else in this country. We are watching an administration right now that treats the Constitution not as a covenant, but as an inconvenience that they don't have to abide by. This is inconvenient, and this is getting in our way. It's authoritarianism. And we need to be careful, because the very little that's left of our democracy can be gone in a second, if it's not too late already. We're watching leaders who speak of law and order while trampling on the very laws that restrain power, picking up people on the streets without due process. We are watching the Bill of Rights praised in speeches and ignored in practice. The First Amendment especially has become a target to this administration. Reporters are attacked as enemies, enemies of the people. How long have you been hearing that? 10 years now since Donald Trump has been in office. Facts are dismissed as disloyalty. Questions are treated as threats. And here's a truth that is harder to say. The most dangerous thing to any authority is not rebellion. I go back to that word. It is witness. It is they're afraid of the pen, the cameras, the witness. It's not outrage, but it's evidence. Witnessing is evidence. It's not noise, but truth spoken clearly. America loves the idea of a free press. We like to say, freedom press, freedom of speech, yeah, we're free. Like to recite it like a hymn, celebrates it as if it's a tradition, invokes it as if it is a slogan. But the press is only welcome when it does not disturb comfort. That's what power does. It doesn't want their comfort disturbed. When it does not expose the power would rather conceal. What power would rather conceal? That's when it is welcome. The free press does not exist to reassure the nation. It exists to reveal it to itself. The free press is a mirror to a society. It's where we test our ideas. It's where we test our democracy. We have seen what happens when that revelation is punished. We have seen journalists arrested while covering protests. We have seen reporters threatened for investigating corruption and violation. We have seen books removed from schools because they told inconvenient truths about race, gender, and sexuality. What is that? And we have seen journalists singled out, smeared, and targeted simply for doing their jobs. You guys know who James Baldwin is, right? My literary hero. He understood that clarity carries consequences. Of course you know who Dr. King is. He knew that truth invites punishment. And generations before us understood that when truth threatens power, power will respond. And it won't always be nice. Most of the times, it is not nice. I would say all of the time. So last week, I felt the weight of that truth in a very, very personal way. Can you imagine the state having control of your freedom simply because they don't like that you are doing your job? So that was very frightening to me. But in my time when I was there, I thought about all the people who'd come before me. I thought about all of the people who fought for civil rights, who fought for gay rights, all of the people who were at Stonewall, Marsha P. Clark. I'm like, yes, those are the people, those are the real heroes. And so what's happening to me, I have at least in this time that I'm living now, more agency, more resources, more rights, and I would hope, than the people who were fighting for our freedom and our civil rights. But I also felt something else. I felt the quiet courage of colleagues who refused to be intimidated. When I walked out, I was surprised by the statements that people had made, by the support that I had. I felt the solidarity of people who understood that this moment was bigger than one story, one journalist, one controversy. Because when a society punishes journalists, it is not punishing a profession. What it's punishing is reality. When reporters are silenced, citizens are blinded. When truth is criminalized, freedom becomes fragile. When the First Amendment becomes optional, democracy becomes hollow. There is an old spiritual that says, does anybody go to the black church here, anybody? Anybody? Anybody know that old spiritual that said, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching on to freedom land. And that's what we're doing. That song was never loud. It was never loud for the sake of noise. It was steady, it was stubborn, it was unyielding. And that's what a free press must be in this time. Now, you don't have to be theatrical, you don't have to be reckless, but unwilling to be turned around, unwilling to give false equivalency. unwilling to give people a platform who simply want to lie and obfuscate and demean people who are not in power, especially people of color and people of LGBTQ folks. So I stand here tonight, not as a victim of a difficult week, but as a witness to a larger truth. Freedom is fragile, but it's not finished. I should add a word to that when I was writing this. Freedom is fragile, but it is not finished yet, because it can be. Truth is contested, but it is not defeated yet. Democracy is strained, but it is not silent yet, right? We got to keep fighting. A free press is not only holy because journalists are perfect, it is holy because it is one of the few places where power can still be questioned, where stories can still be told, where the voiceless can still be heard. And the LGBTQ plus community knows this very deeply and personally. Every right that exists today, it exists because someone refused to be silent. Because someone told the truth when silence would have been safer. Comfort is a poison. Everyone is so used to being comfortable right now. They're not used to sacrificing anything. We have grown so comfortable. We have everything right in the palms of our hands. We have a computer that we carry around every day that can get us all the information that we ever need. And you have your own network in your pocket. But we have become really comfortable. We got to be careful, because that comfort will be the end of our democracy and the end of our rights. All of those things, all of the rights that we have today, as I say, yet, because someone insisted on being seen. So tonight in this room, I see people who have chosen to insist. This is an organization that has chosen to insist. So I am not here to retreat. I am not going to retreat. I am not here to dramatize. I am here to testify in the way that journalists testify, by saying plainly that truth matters, witness matters, and silence has never been neutral. And as long as there are people willing to speak, as long as there are journalists willing to observe and tell a story, as long as there are communities willing to defend dignity, the light is still on. It has not gone out yet. And if the light is still on, the darkness has not won. So thank you for carrying that light, and thank you for your courage, and thank you for letting me bear witness with you tonight. Have a great evening, everybody.
A week after his human rights campaign speech, independent journalist Don Lemon appeared in court on February 13th, along with Minneapolis reporter Georgia Fort and others in the church protest case. All pleaded not guilty to two federal crimes: conspiring to violate someone's constitutional rights and violating the FACE Act, which ironically began as a law to protect women's health clinics. Lemon spoke to the press after the court proceedings.
People are finally realizing what this administration is all about. The process is the punishment with them. And like all of you here in Minnesota, the great people of Minnesota, I will not be intimidated. I will not back down. I will fight these baseless charges, and I will not be silenced.
Black gay journalist Don Lemon's attorneys say that they will fight the case on constitutional grounds. He has the support of the International Women's Media Foundation, the National Association of Black Journalists, and NLGJA, the Association of LGBTQ plus Journalists. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced by her co-host Brian DeShazer. Thanks to the Human Rights Campaign for sharing Don Lemon's speech at their New York City gala. Seals and Crofts and Sweet Honey and the Rock performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
This February, find where live art meets extended reality. Single Thread Theater presents PXR 2026, a mix of live performances, interactive digital presentations, technical deep dives, and exciting installations right here in Kingston at Modern Fuel, the Tet, and at Fort Henry. Get whisked away into immersive worlds like Snowy City's cyberpunk dystopia.